In fact, I had a young person to tell me that if you guys don't meet us in the streets, we're not going to meet you in your sanctuary.
Welcome to the Jackie Ray Show.
Welcome back to the Jackie Ray Show. I'm, of course, your host, Jackie Ray. Do me a favor. If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you hit that subscribe button and that notification bell so you get notified every time I have a new video. If you are listening to this on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, make sure you subscribe. Give me 5 stars and a comment there. I would really appreciate it because we are slowly starting to grow. You guys remember that I used to do this podcast a lot. It was called At the Half back then, where I would do news, politics, and sports. We're actually going to talk a little bit of sports at the end of this, but not the way you think. But I do want to continue my series about leadership in the Black community. Now, if you are in Long Beach, this is going to be catered to you. But I really wanted to make this a broader topic because I think sometimes, especially when it comes to the Black community, we are definitely lacking leadership. And I don't mean like in the smaller sense. I think we have a lot of amazing leaders doing great things on a smaller scale, very specific things that they're doing for the community, whether it's targeting youth or unhoused people or students. I think that we have these small clusters of collective people that are doing great things. But as far as having somebody that is a true leader, and when I'm talking about that, I'm talking about, of course, the first ones that come to mind, I'm wearing my Malcolm X shirt because I'm partial to Malcolm X more than Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The reason for that for me is probably something, if you know me personally, I struggle with in my day-to-day life. I have always said, I don't know why we are still asking for a seat at the table when we can make our own. I do understand some of the resistance to that thought process, because when you think about Black Wall Street, we had two of those, or any time that Black people really have started to excel in their own right, they blew it up. They set it on fire. So, and with me, the reason why I'm not really partial to the leadership of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. at the beginning, now towards the end, you know, he kind of said, well, and I don't want to say kind of, he definitely said that he felt that he had led his people into a burning building. And I think we're still smoldering right now. But I think when we talk about Black people, the Black tax is always just proving that we don't fit the stereotype that white people typically have about us. And I think part of the reason why it was like, okay, we're going to let them beat us up, we're going to let them hose us, we're going to let them sick the dogs on us, is because, hey, they already think we're violent. Let's just show them how nonviolent we are. I'm eye for an eye. I'm very, you know, I just don't believe that you treat people in a higher regard than they treat you. I understand the premise, but I'm saying for me, it just didn't work. And now I wonder where that kind of leadership is, though, because like it or not, whether I was partial to Malcolm or whether I was partial to Martin doesn't really matter. The fact of the matter is we had two great leaders in our community and we have just kind of faltered since then. And I'm just wondering where that's at. So if you remember, if you are following me on Jackie Ray TV, I have started my independent news journey. So you can read some of the articles. I had my first one up where I talked to Reverend Welton Pleasant. He is the minister at the oldest Black church in Long Beach. It's 116 years old. I was talking to him about something entirely different, where a young man had attacked him twice, once several years ago and one more recently. But while I was talking to him, I wanted to get him comfortable with me. I always do that. I always have like a 5 to 10 minute conversation with people before I really dive into my subject matter. And I just asked him, I says, okay, well, you know, you've been in this church for a long time. I grew up in the church. I am not a member of the church now. Part of the reason I'm not part of the church anymore is because I got tired of hearing about the promised land and what it's going to be like when we get to heaven and see Jesus. And ain't nobody talking about what's happening to Tyrone and them down the street. It used to piss me off so bad. So I was like, I can't be part of this. And so that's how I kind of left the church, is I got tired of the lack of action that I saw the church really doing within the Black community. I got tired of seeing these beautiful sanctuaries in impoverished neighborhoods and liquor stores everywhere. And there was just not this real push to unify the community and better the community. And that bothered me. And Reverend Pleasant says something similar. He said that because of the lack of leadership, because of the lack of political push for change that we see in the Black church now, that young people have just kind of strayed away. I'm not that young, but I understand the premise. So I just want you to hear from him as to how he thinks the Black community really benefited from being connected to the church and how we've kind of lost that and how that's a testament to the lack of leadership in our community. So take a listen to Reverend Welton Pleasant.
The Black church in particular has lost its prophetic voice, where we would speak truth to power in the public square. And we don't see that as much as we had in the past. The Black church was very instrumental in the civil rights movement. Remember the civil rights movement, it had a lot of young people involved in that, and they came through the church. You know, unfortunately today, we don't have social activism in the Black church as we once did. It tried to reemerge during the George Floyd situation during the COVID-19. We saw the church, but Black Lives Matter in a lot of ways have taken precedent over what the church used to be about and what they do. And so, in fact, I had a young person to tell me that if you guys don't meet us in the streets, we're not going to meet you in your sanctuary. So they want to see more of us engaged in social activism, which I think is an indictment on the churches that we have not, our voices have got muted politically and socially. And we're not necessarily been an advocate for the community as we once were. And as a result, we have this disconnect from this generation to the church.
He also realizes the church needs to do more for young people than provide midweek service and Sunday school.
We have a different paradigm that has definitely shifted because we have a generation that has not been raised in church and have no real affinity for the church. I love the church as an adult because the church was so instrumental in my life as youth. And so I've always had an affinity for the church, but we have a generation now that has totally have grown up apart from the church. And unfortunately, with some of the scandals that have happened in the church, it has made this generation somewhat skeptical of the faith and the church. And so we don't have that generation no more that really has grew up in church where they're here every day of the week. And the church was very much part of their lives. We just don't have that. And that's just not here. I think that's across the board. When you look at all the stats, and one of the biggest challenges is how do we reach Generation Z and the millennials? That's a challenge from the mega church to the small church. We all have that same challenge where we're trying to reach that generation.
Pastor Pleasant believes the church also played a vital role in the Black family. And without the church, some of those values have been lost.
One of the problems, I think, is our homes are so messed up in a lot of ways and dysfunctional. And so we don't have, at one time when we had families coming to church together, because this church has been around 116 years because it's a family church. Everybody in here was connected some way. Then you had people marrying each other in the church. So it was really a family strong church. And so that gives longevity. And so we have to really focus on trying to rebuild our families, which is critical because strong families make up strong churches. And so if the family is weak, the church is probably going to be weak, you know. But I think that's one thing the church has to emphasize. I think another thing that we have to hear what our young people are saying. And we have to try to resonate with them. Some of them, I think, do have just a whole misunderstanding of what church is all about. But I think we have to at least have a conversation with them to hear what they're saying, why they feel what they feel about the church, you know, and let them have a voice in the church. And so I think we have a bridge between our Christianity and our manhood. And that's why the social activism piece is so critical, because the social activism says, I'm engaged, I see what's happening, I'm relevant to this community. Because much of the pain, the plight, the predicament we see with the young people today is a result of social policies. I remember back in the 80s when Reagan closed a lot of these teen posts, all these programs, summer jobs programs. Put a lot of our youth during the summer in particular with nothing to do. And no activities to be engaged in, involved in. And as a result, we have what we have today because they're not engaged in productive activities that would make them accountable and contributors of society. And so, and then again, I'm a big person on family, and I do think much of our problems can be traced back to the dysfunctionality of the family. But again, to me, those are social issues. It related to economics, because now you got two people that almost have to work just to survive in this economy. So we don't have an economy that's friendly to family as well. And so I think we really have to focus on building families, mothers and fathers. The Black family Is the ecology necessary to perpetuate the positive development of our community? And if we're broken, you know, everything will fall and rise with the family.
Right.
You know, so we really have to focus on family. And it starts with relationship between Black men and Black women. You know, there's a lot of issues there. And so if those issues are not worked out, it will reveal itself in marriage and it will produce a dysfunctional home.
I really want to think. Now, he wasn't even thinking about talking about leadership with me. Like I said, we were talking about something else, but the nuggets that he dropped were so, so valuable. And I just want to thank him for sharing those. I am not trying to indoctrinate you. I am not trying to tell you to go back to the church or go to the church. But I am saying, as a people, as a whole, I understand we're not a monolith, but as a whole, we are spiritual people in some way, shape, or form. I think if we can figure out a way to come together, leaders are going to always rise to the top. Leaders are always going to be vocal. Leaders are always going to say what they got to say without fear. And that's what we need. I think in our society right now, specifically the Black community, and just so you know, that's always going to be at the forefront of my mind. I think we are still so assimilated. And I've said this before and people get mad at me, but I mean what I say. I say what I mean. I think integration was one of the worst things that ever happened to our community, because integration said, I have to fit into their society instead of seeing value and lifting up our own society. And I think we're still suffering from that. I've seen so many Black people that their parents saw that and they bought. I met a guy just the other day. His parents bought 3 houses on the block. They don't own one of them right now. That community is turning into a predominantly white community because they saw the value in taking the check or mismanage their money. We need to learn the value of money. We need to learn the value of instilling that money within our community. And we need to learn the value of each other. We can agree to disagree. I think that's something we always fail to do. And I'm going to show you how I think that's true in my personal life, because I'm a huge sports fan. If you've been following me for any length of time, you know that. I particularly love women's basketball. I love football, basketball, whatever. It doesn't matter. I just love sports in general because to me, they're the last of our gladiators, right? So I just absolutely love that. In my coverage, I'm going into my 3rd year in covering the WNBA, which I absolutely love. Dawn Staley, shout out to her for winning her 3rd NCAA championship with the South Carolina Gamecocks. I'm so proud of her. She is such a leader, and I just love this woman to death. That being said, 2 things. 1, journalists, stop asking questions that are irrelevant to the game when people are going to face a big game. It's so disrespectful. Media day, a day through the season, ask these questions that you know are going to get you that clickbait that you're looking for. But let these people live in their moment. That being said, a reporter asked Dawn Staley how she felt about transgender women playing in the W. Her first initial response was great. She says, I think people who want to play sports should be allowed to play sports. Of course, the reporter, and I'm not mad at that, the reporter was not going to leave it at that because that's not the question I asked you. And so then she answered that and she said that she felt that transgender women should be able to play in women's sports. I think that's such a lesson in that statement, probably not the lesson you think. I emphatically, to my soul, disagree with that statement. I do not think that biological men should be playing in women's sports. And I think the push to do so speaks to misogyny to me. I think that, you know, when you look at Lisa Leslie is not old and decrepit in a wheelchair because she's 90 years old. She's still got a lot of years in front of her. And that's because professional sports for women has been a fight. Professional sports for women. The WNBA was created in my lifetime. It was 2 years ago. I was reporting on the fact that these NCAA athletes in the March Madness were in hotels that were subpar, had roaches, and they was feeding them bologna sandwiches. It's always been a fight for women to get these spaces, these safe spaces, to play the sports that they love. And I think that biological men jumping onto that is infuriating, and I don't think it's the right call. I think those women who were in that swim meet and had a biological man running around and all his biology was showing, but it was okay because that person identified as a woman and won that meet, I think that's absolutely wrong. And I think as a society, we know it's wrong, but we're allowing for spaces for people to identify how they see themselves. And I think that's what we're missing. I am very pro allowing people to identify and operate in spaces on how they see themselves. I think that in sports, we have so many divisions. I don't think there's anything wrong with creating a co-ed sport. I don't think that there's anything wrong with creating a transgender sport or a league. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But here's the problem that I have with Dawn Staley's statement. And it has nothing to do with Don Staley making the statement. People will take that one statement and all the greatness that Don Staley has done, all the lessons that she's instilled in young people, all the women who are going to be better women, whether it's in basketball or leadership or whatever they do in life, just because they've come across Don Staley, this is going to be reduced to her opinion on one thing. You can absolutely disagree with her. You can absolutely disagree with me, even though I still think I'm right, but you can absolutely disagree with me. I can absolutely disagree with you, but it shouldn't change the fact that I see value in you if there's things that you have that are valuable. We can agree to disagree. We don't have to break bread on every single topic. There's some topics you can go over there and break bread with them because I'm not going to rock with you on that. And that's absolutely fine. As long as we understand that, again, if we're not going to be a monolith, we say that as Black people a lot, we're not a monolith. Then that means you should be able to agree to disagree. That means you should be able to still lift somebody up when you can see their heart and you can see their passion and you can see that they mean the best for several people in our community who benefit from that person just walking amongst us. I'm never going to agree with half the stuff that happens in this world because half the stuff that happens in this world is crazy. I think that we coddle each other too much. I think that right is wrong. Right is right. Wrong is wrong. Up is down. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think gray areas really exist. That's just me. I think that people create gray areas. But if you operate in a shade of gray, but you are uplifting young people, or if you're investing in your Black community, who am I to say, oh, I wouldn't mess with that person because they think this about this one topic? That's crazy to me. We've got to stop doing that because I've said it before and I'm going to say it again. As Black people, we are all we got. You can keep running down there to city council if you want to. We are all we got. You can keep asking white people to be different. We are all we got. And until we see that and recognize that, I'm going to be saying this forever and ever. And we've got to leave it better for the young people that are coming up after us. Because you know what Blue said on the show last week? He said, we got to hold older people accountable because they left it like this. If we really feel that, let's not leave it like this for young people. Let's do better. Let's make sure that we let people know, hey, we can be all on one accord when it comes to us and we can disagree about other things. But look, y'all, again, life is short. We got to make it good for each other. We've got to make it good for the next generation. So make sure that's your goal and make it good.